I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. Gabby Petito is the latest young woman whose disappearance has generated a raft of media coverage. She's among the tens of thousands of people who are missing on any given day. The criminal law scholar Zach Summers has studied media coverage of missing persons, and he's found tremendous disparity in the amount and intensity of coverage between white women and women of color. The revered PBS anchor Gwen Ifill called it missing white woman syndrome. Zach Summers joins me today, along with Natalie Wilson, a co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation, and Dr. Danielle Slakoff, a professor of criminal justice at Sacramento State University. That's on the way today on Midday, after the news. Good afternoon and welcome. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for being along for the ride today. I appreciate it. If you haven't heard the latest news about the search for Gabby Petito and the boyfriend with whom she was last seen, that information is not hard to come by. Miss Petito and her fiancé, Brian Laundrie, embarked on a cross-country trip in June. Miss Petito was in touch with her parents throughout the summer until the end of August, when her communications stopped. Her parents reported her missing on September 11th. Brian Laundrie returned to his parents' home in Florida 3 days later without Miss Petito and refused to speak with authorities. Miss Petito's remains were found in Wyoming on September 19th. Brian Laundrie left his parents' home on September 14th, and his whereabouts remain unknown. The FBI has issued a federal arrest warrant for him. More than 500,000 people were reported missing in 2020. By the end of that year, about 89,000 missing person cases were active, and nearly 45% of those cases were people of color. But naming any of those victims based on news accounts of their fates is nearly impossible. Baltimoreans may remember the case of Felicia Barnes, a young African-American woman from North Carolina who was killed while visiting Maryland. And a missing Asian-American woman, Lauren Cho, has attracted some media attention. But Gabby Petito, Natalie Holloway, Chandra Levy, Lacey Peterson, and others have become national household names, and they are all white. And the vast majority of women and girls of color who are missing remain far outside the media spotlight. In 2004, the late PBS news anchor Gwen Ifill coined the term missing white woman syndrome, referring to the fact that white women who are reported missing are much more likely to have their stories covered. Today on Midday, we'll examine this phenomenon and explore why the coverage of missing people of color is so disproportionate. Later in the show, I'll speak with one of the co-founders of the Black and Missing Foundation, but we begin with two scholars who study this issue. Dr. Danielle Slakoff is an assistant professor of criminal justice at Sacramento State University, whose research focuses on media and crime. She has done studies on this phenomenon, and she joins us on Zoom from Sacramento. Dr. Slakoff, welcome.
Hi, Tom. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for being here. And Zach Summers is an attorney with the firm of Kirkland & Ellis. He's also a criminologist who has studied the nexus of criminal law, race, and the news media. He's on Zoom with us from Chicago. Mr. Summers, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
And listeners, if you'd like to weigh in and make a comment and pose a question to our guests, our number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. So, Professor Slakoff, if I could, let me start with you. Both you and Zach Summers have published studies about this. Tell us, you've got a couple of them out there. Tell us about the intent and the aspiration of your research with these studies.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me again. So I did a study specifically looking at the missing white woman syndrome in print news, specifically with my colleague, Dr. Hank Fridella. We looked at 4 years worth of stories about white and black missing women and girls across 11 different United States newspapers. And what we found, very much in line with Zach's work, is that the white missing women and girls were more likely to receive initial coverage and they were more likely to receive repeated coverage compared to the Black missing women and girls. And we also found, and we think this is important, I'm really looking forward to hearing from Natalie about this later, we also found that missing Black girls and women accounted for about 20% of the news stories, even though for the time period we looked at, they were estimated to account for about 34% of missing people. So obviously that's a disparity of about 14 percentage points. And we basically argued that the media is continuing to underrepresent stories about missing Black women and girls.
And Zach Summers, you did a study as well in 2016, and I assume that it's fair to say that your data suggests exactly the same thing that Professor Slakoff was just talking about.
It is, and so that was the primary motivation behind my study, was to establish some sort of empirical basis for this conversation, because this conversation was being had, but we just didn't have a whole lot of data to be able to point to. So now we're starting to see an increase in the number of studies out there, and in the persuasiveness of the data, because the more studies you have finding consistent results, obviously the more persuasive the findings. So I found the same thing of disparities, both in terms of who gets news coverage at all, and then also as far as the intensity of news coverage. And in particular, I found that white women and girls made up about a third of the individuals who appeared in the news, which that was already, there were already disparities there, but despite making up only a third of the people in the news, they were the focus of about half of the articles in my data set.
And Danielle Slakoff, what this means is that this is not something that is just anecdotal. It's not something that people have a general impression about, that there are more stories about white women as opposed to people of color when they go missing. I mean, we now have really solid data. You've run the numbers, you and Zach Summers both, and now others have run the numbers. So there's really no question about the notion that people of color who go missing are covered less in the media, right?
Correct. And like you just mentioned, Zach and I have both done work on this. And then there's been some work, our friends, Michelle Jonas and her colleagues as well, that all point to this phenomenon.
The number here at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. My guests in this first part of our conversation about missing white woman syndrome are Dr. Danielle Slakoff. She's a professor of criminal justice at Sacramento State University in California. Zach Summers is an attorney and a criminologist. He's with the firm of Kirkland & Ellis in Chicago. We'd love to hear from you and your impressions of the news media, your understanding and your reaction to the news coverage of, say, Gabby Petito, since she is the one who's most often in the news now. So give us a call or drop us an email or a tweet. And Zach Summers, when you say intensity, it's not just a matter of frequency, the number of stories and the number of times that these stories appear in print or on television or on the web, but it's the intensity. What do you mean by the intensity?
So the motivation behind looking at coverage intensity was trying to distinguish the point that you're getting at, which is that I think while it is useful to know which missing persons receive news coverage, there's a fundamental difference between the type of news coverage that we've seen, for example, in Gabby Petito's case, and an individual that gets, you know, just a stray article or two written about them in a local paper. So coverage intensity is the idea of the quantity of coverage, the scope of and the reach of the coverage. So we've seen in Gabby Petito's case that this is not just obviously a local story or a regional story, it's national and even international. So it's just a measure to try to differentiate the amount of coverage and the type of coverage the different cases receive.
And Dr. Slakoff, you did another study that is fairly recent, it was about a year ago, about the way Latina and Black female victims are portrayed when we are introduced to these people who are missing. We are introduced to them in a different way when we're talking about white women as opposed to women of color. Talk a little bit about your findings in that regard.
Absolutely. So this study was a little bit different because we looked at all women and girl victims. So not specifically missing women and girls, although they were absolutely included in this data set. But you kind of just gave a great summary. What we essentially found was that the stories about the white women and girl victims were much more sympathetic in the narratives than the stories about the Latina and Black women and girls. So to give some examples, the Latina and Black women and girl victims, they were more likely to be portrayed as risk-taking at the time the crime occurred or as bad people in some way. And one of the findings that I think is the strongest that we found is that their victimizations were often normalized through very detailed descriptions of their unsafe environments. On the flip side, the white women and girl victims often had their safe environments described. So basically making it seem like those crimes were more, were harder to anticipate.
Yeah, and the fact that when these supposedly innocent young white women have been abducted or are missing for whatever reason, Zach Summers, the shock value of that. I mean, we're talking about women. When I think of Gabby Petito or Natalie Holloway from a few years ago, they come from neighborhoods where this sort of thing just doesn't happen. So there's a shock value factor to that. Is that a legitimate criteria or a legitimate dimension of a story for a news director or a news editor to say, yeah, this is unusual, that's what makes it news, this is something, violence in some neighborhoods is a very rare occurrence, violence in other neighborhoods much less rare. That's true around the country. Do you think the judgments are being made because this is an unusual thing, therefore it merits news coverage?
I think that's playing a role, unquestionably playing a role in the decision-making process here. So as far as determining what makes a specific missing person case newsworthy, I think there are a variety of factors. I think where we run into issues is that what our determinations of newsworthiness as reflected in the demographics of missing persons who receive news coverage don't actually reflect reality. So when we talk about, whether it's unusual for a certain person to have gone missing or from a certain area, while there are different levels of crime commission rates across different zip codes or neighborhoods, whatever it may be, we're still seeing a dramatic overrepresentation of white folks, and in particular white girls and white women, who go missing and when compared to the rate of missingness that those people have nationwide. So I think it's certainly playing a role in editorial decisions, but I think it's probably it's a bit of a fallacy as far as the overrepresentation that we're seeing.
And we have a caller who I think wants to continue along this line. Tom is on the line from Mount Vernon. Welcome to the show. Thanks for calling.
Yes, good afternoon, folks. And especially listening to Mr. Summers, and glad we got Ms. Slack off on the phone, because I'm just wondering, in their research, have they determined a variable of class in their research? And in other words, say if a person who was the black daughter of an NFL player from Potomac, Maryland, went missing, would they get more coverage than a Hispanic or white mill worker's daughter from Curtis Bay?
All right, well, thanks for that question, Tom. Danielle Slakoff, what do you think? And we have another emailer, Michael, who says there's clearly a race bias in this coverage, but has there been any study of class disparities, rich missing women as opposed to poor missing women? What do you think?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I had a little trouble hearing him, but I think I got the sense of his question. And I will say, in that study I mentioned earlier about the missing white woman syndrome, we did actually find that one of the things that was different about the stories about Black missing women and girls is that they were more likely to have their jobs mentioned, specifically the fact that they were, great parts of their company or really well-respected social workers, for example. And so we talked about that as potentially using job status as a way of, quote unquote, humanizing somebody. And we didn't see that in the same way about the stories about white missing women and girls. So I do think there is something to job status. And I heard something about a job there as well. I do think that can be one factor of newsworthiness. However, as Zach mentioned, there are lots of factors of newsworthiness. And what we continue to see in multiple studies is that there is this racial element.
Let's see if we could sneak in one more call before we take a break. Let's go to Adam, who's on the line in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Dr. Slakoff and Zach Summers.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just think we all can agree that disparate outcomes don't necessarily imply discrimination or disparate treatment. And I was just kind of wondering how you guys insulated your studies and your data from that kind of fallacy, because it does seem to me and to some of the other callers and emailers that, you know, just kind of breaking this down by race may not be as efficacious as looking at a plethora of variables that kind of combine together, especially class and money. Like if a rich person's daughter goes missing, I think they're going to get a lot more media coverage, or like a celebrity, someone, it doesn't matter what their race is going to be. That's going to have more weight on it. So I just wanted to see how you insulated your data from that kind of fallacy. Thank you.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, Adam and Zach Summers. Despite Adam's contention that it's a fallacy, your data shows that the numbers are pretty stark and educative in this regard.
Yeah, I think it's a fair point too, and I will say that my analysis, the second stage of the analysis, did build in some economic factors here. So I looked at the median household income of the hometowns that all of the missing persons were from, and that variable was not found to have any statistical impact, and the race effects were held and were statistically significant even when controlling for household income in that way. But I think it's a fair point, and I think. It's important to caution that when we're looking at these broad level, macro level trends, it's hard to say anything definitive about why any one given case becomes newsworthy, because all we can do is kind of, at least based on the type of research that I've done, and this is where the type of research that Danielle has done can help inform this too, by kind of looking at it from a bit more of a qualitative perspective. But when I'm looking at things in a broader quantitative perspective, these are, like I said, just kind of these high level trends. So we can speculate, we can talk about whether certain aspects of cases are consistent with the findings that were revealed by my study, but we can't necessarily say anything definitive one way or the other.
Zach Summers is an attorney and criminologist. He's with the firm of Kirkland and Ellis in Chicago. Dr. Danielle Slakoff is an assistant professor of criminal justice at Sacramento State University. We'll have more on missing white woman syndrome in the news media after a quick break, and we will welcome to the program Natalie Wilson. She is one of the co-founders of Black and Missing Foundation. If you'd like to be part of our conversation at Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. By the way, coming up tomorrow, John Davis, the host of Motor Week on MPT, joins me with the latest news from the automotive industry. Computer chips remain scarce, which is limiting new car productions, and that's making it very expensive to buy a new or used set of wheels these days. We'll talk about whether or not there's an end in sight to the price hikes. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick will review the new show at Baltimore's Everyman Theater. It's called Flyin' West. So that's on the way tomorrow. On Midday, if you just joined us today, we're talking about what the journalist Gwen Ifill jokingly called missing white woman syndrome. Here she is in 2004 responding to Suzanne Malveau of CNN at a conference of journalists of color. This clip is courtesy of C-SPAN.
I think at the time when 94 in Rwanda, we were looking at, Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding and Wayne Bobbitt. You know, everybody knows what happened to Bobbitt.
I call it the missing white woman syndrome. If there's a missing white woman, we're going to cover that every day.
It's true.
But of course, for Black, Asian, Hispanic, and Indigenous families, the lack of media coverage when their loved ones go missing is no laughing matter. And Gwen Ifill's off-the-cuff joke 17 years ago has stuck as an apt description of how most newsrooms approach the coverage of people of color who are missing. My guests today are Zach Summers, an attorney and criminologist from Chicago, and Dr. Danielle Slakoff, who teaches criminal justice at Sacramento State University in California. And joining us now is a co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation, Natalie Wilson. Ms. Wilson, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And tell us why, I guess it's you and your sister-in-law, Derica Wilson, why did you, in 2008, decide to establish this foundation?
Sure. So there was a young lady by the name of Tamika Houston who disappeared from Derica's hometown of Spartanburg, South Carolina. And we read how her family really struggled to get media coverage, particularly national media coverage surrounding her disappearance. So we decided to do some research to see if this was an issue dominating our communities, because we definitely didn't see ourselves in a news cycle. Lori Hacken disappeared weeks after Tamika did, and she dominated the news, especially national news. And Tamika's aunt, she reached out to the same programs, the same reporters, same news outlets, and there was no interest at all. So at the time when we did our research, 30% of all persons missing were of color, and that number has now grown to 40%. So Derica and I decided to join forces. I'm in PR and she's in law enforcement, and those are the two critical professions needed to bring awareness to and find our missing. And until we began to research the issue of missing people of color, we had no idea how lopsided the numbers really were as they pertain to missing Americans. And they're not all young white women. In fact, 30%, as I mentioned before, were persons of color and mostly African American. And we continue to see that number climb. And if we ask anyone to name, any of your listeners to name three black or brown men or women or children who have received national media coverage because of their disappearance, I guarantee you that they will come up short. So we are doing all that we can to be an advocate or a voice for the families who are desperately searching for their missing loved ones.
You're right. It was very difficult. I had to look up some names of people. Daniel Robinson is a man who's missing, and Keisha Jacobs, another young African-American woman in her mid-20s, who went to spend the night with a friend and never returned home the next day. She's in Richmond, Virginia. Talk about, Ms. Wilson, the gender breakdown between people who are missing. We talk about missing women and girls of color, but your research shows that the gender disparity is pretty evenly divided, isn't it?
Absolutely. According to stats provided by the FBI, as you mentioned, it's pretty equal in regards to gender. And our role is to, you know, equal the media coverage across the board, because we want to saturate the local and national media markets as well so that our missing can be household names too. And as Danielle mentioned earlier, you know, when a young man or woman is missing from our community, they're criminalized. And they're stereotyped as being involved in some type of criminal activity or the norm for that community. So we're trying to also change the narrative.
You mentioned that you're in PR, and Derica Wilson, the other co-founder of the Black Missing Foundation, is former law enforcement. When you speak to editors or people who are running newsrooms and television stations, what do they tell you when they say, no, this isn't something we're going to pursue? Do they have a reason? Do they have an answer? Do you find any consistency among the answers that you're getting?
Well, oftentimes I'm met with silence. So it's not a direct no. It's just silence, no interest at all. But I will say that we have come a long way as an organization. We still have, much more strides to make. And I'll tell you why, you know, media coverage is so important and we need to get the media to care, is because intense early media coverage ensures that the community is looking for the missing person and it increases the chance of a recovery. But it also forces law enforcement to add additional resources to the case. And that's vital. I remember when we first started the organization, there was a young lady by the name of Phoenix Colden who was still missing out of St. Louis. And I called every single news station in that area. And finally, one of the assignment editors said, you know, just send it to me. I'll see what I can do. And thankfully, she showed it for a few seconds on air. And then the other news outlets or platforms started to pick up her story.
Natalie Wilson is a co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation. Zach Summers is with us as well. He's a criminologist and attorney in Chicago. And Dr. Danielle Slakoff is here as well. She's on the line from Sacramento. If you'd like to join us, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. And our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. And Danielle Slakoff, talk about the financial incentive for running these stories or running particular kinds of stories that certainly skew towards covering white people who are missing as opposed to people of color. That certainly plays into this in some regard, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that this is incredibly troubling, right? This idea that cases about white missing people tend to get a lot of clicks and a lot of engagement. And for that reason, you see a continuation of that coverage. And I think it's important to note in this case with Gabby Petito that we didn't just see this in traditional media outlets. We also saw it on social media and, you know, people making jokes about the case to garner engagement. And so I think that this is really important part of it is that the media often are able to get higher advertising revenues for the number of clicks and the level of engagement they get. And so they tend to latch on to these mega stories, right? And so I think that's part of what's driving this is that, at least in terms of why the overrepresentation, is that we see that these stories become these national events. And I think that the listeners probably saw that play out here with the Gabby Petito case.
We have an email from a listener, Stephanie, who wants to make us aware of Akia Eggleston. She's been missing since 2017, 21 years old, 8 months pregnant. She went missing on the day that she was supposed to attend her baby shower. She has a 3-year-old daughter, and 4 years have passed, and there's been no word. Only one local station here in Baltimore, WBFF, ran any stories about her, and the only family and only the family is begging for information. Akia Eggleston, she stayed with this emailer's family for a year after her daughter was born. Her mother had died and her stepfather had kicked her out. If anyone knows anything about Akia Eggleston, please call the police. And Zach Summers, you've written and thought about the sort of damsel in distress narrative that hovers in the ether around these decisions being made in newsrooms. Talk a little bit about that and how that plays into the decisions that editors and reporters are making.
Damsels in distress is the idea and a trope that we see in this country all the time. And it's something that we grow up with and we're familiar with from fairy tales, books that we read as kids, Disney movies. And it's the idea that they're classically, it's usually a princess, but some sort of girl or woman who needs to be rescued. And usually by a knight in shining armor who is male. And I think the reason that that's relevant to these stories is that when we see someone go missing, especially if it's a young girl or a young woman, that it plays right into that. That's, you know, the damsel in distress who's gone missing, who needs to be rescued by law enforcement, which is disproportionately male. I think it fits really neatly into a narrative that we have seen across a variety of spheres in our life regularly. And so in that sense, it's very easy for us to latch on to that story as a society, and easy for us to care about that story in a way that might not necessarily be the case if it's, say, a young boy or a man who's gone missing. And so I think that plays a role into determinations of why a certain story or missing person case is newsworthy.
And Natalie Wilson, in your work with the Black and Missing foundation, it's important, for example, on the law enforcement side, how cases are initially characterized. There's a difference between a missing person and a runaway. There's a difference if the newsroom is run by African Americans or white people. And of course, we all know that newsrooms are overwhelmingly captained by white men. Celeste Headlee of NPR and I have talked about this. She's coming on the show in just a couple of weeks to talk more about this. In your dealings with the news media, have you found a difference in receptivity among black journalists that you've spoken with as opposed to white journalists, Ms. Wilson?
Well, first, let me touch on the law enforcement part of it. What we hear oftentimes from families is if their child is missing, their child is classified as a runaway. And if you're classified as a runaway, you do not receive the Amber Alert or any type of media coverage. So that is an issue that we're also working to correct, because these children, even if they left home voluntarily, what are they running away from, and ultimately what are they running to? We know that within 24 to 48 hours of being on the street, they can become victims of sex trafficking. But with the Gabby Petito story, we are seeing more reporters, whether they are African American or any nationality, being more receptive to now having this tough conversation, and to have the conversation going about featuring more of, you know, our missing. We say less is more. So less of one person or one particular group dominating the news cycle. Let's, you know, show more of everyone else. So that's something that, you know, we're working towards changing, as I said before, changing the narrative and changing how we show or view these missing persons cases.
And Professor Slakoff, yesterday, of course, was Indigenous Peoples Day. We've got a couple of listeners who want to talk about the number of Indigenous people who have gone missing and the kind of coverage that they receive. I know you've done some work on coverage of the Hispanic community. What can you tell us about the statistics when it comes to Indigenous folks?
Yeah, we know. And let me first state that there are some amazing organizations doing the work on the front lines, trying to bring the missing and murdered Indigenous women epidemic to the forefront. But we do know that Indigenous women and girls have extremely high rates of violent victimization. And yet we know that data collection about their cases is very hampered. We also know that there are jurisdictional issues between tribal and other police. And a recent study coming out of Wyoming found that, similar to some of what we've talked about earlier, is that Indigenous people who are missing are often criminalized or problematized in the media as well. So we're seeing a lot of these same issues. However, to my knowledge, and perhaps Natalie and Zach know differently, we haven't seen a large-scale study of how Indigenous missing people are covered just yet. Like I said, the one that I've seen was specific to Wyoming.
And Ms. Wilson, we agree that we would let you go at a certain time, and we're going to hold to that promise. But before we let you go, just one final question. Your organization is concentrating on African Americans who have been reported missing. Since the movement for Black Lives has, become, if you will, more widespread, more almost mainstream, given the interracial support for that movement following the deaths of George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, has there been any increase in interest in the work that your foundation is doing? I mean, do you see any breaks in the barriers of the media covering the stories that you think need to be covered?
Yes, we're seeing, a shift. And as I've mentioned before, we have come a long way as an organization, but we still have a long ways to go. And with the social injustices around the country, people are taking notice And they're no longer just sitting back. They want to get involved. They want to, you know, make a difference. So, you know, we'll just continue to fight and continue to move forward to help these families that are desperately searching for their missing loved one.
Natalie Wilson, along with her sister-in-law, Derica Wilson, is a co-founder of the Black and Missing Foundation. Ms. Wilson, thank you so much for your work and for your time today. I appreciate it and hope we can talk again sometime.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good day.
Thank you. Dr. Danielle Slakoff is an assistant professor of criminal justice at Sacramento State University. Zach Summers is an attorney and criminologist. He's with the firm of Kirkland & Ellis in Chicago. We will have more with Professor Slakoff and Mr. Summers after a quick break. You can join us at 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. Our Twitter handle is @MiddayWYPR. To follow me on Twitter, it's @TomHallWYPR. We'll try to get to a couple of calls after this quick break. Stay with us.
This is your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. If you've just joined us, we're talking about what the former host of the PBS NewsHour, Gwen Ifill, called missing white woman syndrome, the disparity in the coverage that white missing persons receive compared to black and brown people. My guests are Dr. Danielle Slakoff. She's an assistant professor of criminal justice at Sacramento State University, and Zach Summers. He's an attorney and criminologist. He's with the firm of Kirkland & Ellis in Chicago. They're with us until the top of the hour. If you'd like to join us as well, our number here at midday, 410-662-8780. Our email is midday@wypr.org. You can tweet us @MiddayWYPR. And before we go to the phones, Danielle Slakoff, I want to ask you about the relationship between media coverage of these events and a genre or a phenomenon known as true crime. This is something podcasts and television shows that talk about real cases. It's an entertainment vehicle for a lot of people, and they're clearly popular because you see them all over TV and the internet and podcasts. What can you tell us about the relationship between this entertainment medium and the reality of missing persons and how they are covered and investigated?
Absolutely. So some of my most recent research has looked at true crime podcasts specifically. And, you know, there are some major issues with true crime. And one of the main ones is that it is causing what is undoubtedly this family's one of the worst times of their life, if not the worst time of their life, to be, you know, entertainment for others. And I mentioned this a little bit earlier in the hour that in the Gabby Petito case, we saw tons of social media interest as well in people making memes as well as funny videos about the case, which is just like I said, it's very difficult because this is a real family that has lost their daughter. This has major implications for them. And yet we're seeing this entertainment aspect come out of this. And of course, this is not just the Gabby Petito case. This is many cases that get, you know, the quote unquote true crime treatment. I do think it's important to point out that research shows that at least some women are drawn to true crime to learn warning signs and safety tips. And so I do think that it's possible that people are trying to piece together in this particular case, they're trying to piece together how this could have happened, right? Because they looked, Gabby and her partner, they looked so happy on this road trip via social media. And so I think that we can't discount the fact that at least some people appear to engage to learn something from true crime.
Yeah, there's a true crime scholar, at least that's how she's described in the New Yorker magazine, named Jean Murley, who talks about the rise of true crime podcasts, which you've, you know, just told us about your studies, and their legions of white women fans. So maybe that is in some subtle way or unsubtle way influencing the decisions by newsrooms and television assignment editors when it comes to what they're going to cover, because they figure there's a big market out there. And Zach Summers, let me ask you to respond to an email from a listener, Lewis, who says, I wholeheartedly support equality in media coverage of missing persons. I just wish you had not chosen the ongoing Petito case to illustrate missing white woman syndrome. The Petito case is still being investigated, and it's no less tragic because she is white.
I would agree with the last portion of that. I think it's important to highlight that no one in engaging, at least that I've seen in the conversation around missing white woman syndrome, has tried to detract from Gabby Petito's case. And I would say argue that none of us here today have done that either. What happened to her was, of course, unspeakably tragic. And what her family is going through, we can only imagine. All we're saying is that the Gabby Petitos of the world, while they are also worthy of coverage, so are people who come from different places and have different backgrounds than she does. And so I think I also would push back and say that I think this is the exact time that we do need to have these conversations, when this spotlight is being shown so brightly on this case. And I think we see this even from comments from her family. Her father has made comments consistent with this of encouraging news media to cover not just people like his daughter, but all missing persons. So I think while this conversation is ongoing and while people are interested in this case, I think this is the exact right time that we need to have this conversation, while still being understanding and recognizing that it's incredibly traumatic for her family, and that what happened to her is something that no family should have to go through.
And, you know, it's not a zero-sum game. It's not like you stop covering Gabby Petito so that you can start covering somebody else. I mean, we talk a lot about the 24-hour news cycle. Well, that's a lot of hours, and there's a lot of room on a lot of programs. Let's go to Milton, who's in Edgewood. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Tom, and good midday to you and your guests. And as quick as I can get it, I want to preface what I wanted to say with the old, I guess, adage, can't see the forest for the trees. Well, I think we need to stand back and see the whole forest, not just all the little individual trees. And I agree with Gwen Ifill, you know, with her thing about the white girl syndrome, but I also agree with Bonnie Raitt. There's a line in Bonnie Raitt's song that says, I can't make you love me if you don't. You can't make your heart feel anything that it want, that it won't, something like that. But anyway, the point I want to make with that is, individual, that doesn't say that we shouldn't continue to try to, you know, do a, even put a playing field. You know, by all means, we need to do that. But we need to recognize that we live in a country that is institutionally racist. And that's not to say I'm prejudiced. It's just that that's just the fact that we live in, and that's the forest we gotta pay attention to, and the individual trees are the individual people that we are nitpicking about why this is not covered and why is that covered. And I'm not saying it's wrong to feel those things and have it on news programs, but we gotta recognize where we live. We are not gonna make white people love black people. It's just not gonna happen. Individual people can change, but for the overall, we are not going to make white people love black people.
Well, Milton, thank you for your comment and your perspective. And certainly, Dr. Slakoff, that is a comment that comes from lived experience of Milton, an experience that African-Americans, I'm sure, across the country share. I wonder, Danielle Slakoff, if you could comment about the upside to the kind of intense frequency of coverage of a story like Gabby Petito. Has it helped investigators unearth tips and unearth information? I mean, as I understand it, her remains, which were found someplace in Wyoming, were linked to the fact that some people who were in the area where those remains were found were familiar with this story because of media coverage. I mean, has there been any data, you know, collected about whether or not law enforcement, in fact, does benefit from these high-profile, the coverage of some of these high-profile cases?
I don't know that it's definitive whether it's helpful in such a large scale. The reason I say that is that with so many people, so many eyes on it, you have the potential for tips that potentially could distract from what happened. In this case, as you just mentioned, it appears it was a tip that potentially led to where Gabby's body was ultimately recovered. And obviously that is a sign that the media attention was helpful in this case, right? But I think you can think back to, for example, the Boston Marathon bombing, what was happening in real time, that there are potential negative consequences as well. So I don't know that there's any perfect answer to that question. I do think that it's a really, really interesting one for sure.
Let's go to the phones again to Gail, who's been patient and waiting on the line from Baltimore. Welcome to Midday. Thanks for your call.
Thank you, Tom, and all to your guests. You know, I was just going to say something really quickly, that I'm an African-American woman, 58 years old. And I'm married to a white loving man. And I have said to him and his family and my white friends that if anything ever happens to me, if you all don't press, then nothing's going to get done. And that's just simple, that it just won't. And we watch these stories day in and day out, and love and your heart pulls for everybody. You just want equal treatment, you know, for coverage of people who are missing. And for the person, the people that were calling about the race and the class, I don't know that I buy that, because obviously we know if Michael Jordan's daughter went missing, of course they're going to get national coverage. Most of these women, at least it looks like to me, or maybe middle class, upper middle class, and there are plenty of, you know, Black and Native American women that are in that category, and you just don't see it.
Well, thanks for that comment, Gail. Zach Summers, want to respond to Gail's perspective?
Sure. So I think that's consistent. We've seen research in other areas that shows that kind of the exceptional cases or individuals that don't necessarily represent the whole. So we see certain types or certain individuals who are people of color. So Michael Jordan or Barack Obama, who, yes, they are Black, but they're in some ways almost viewed different racially as a society because of how exceptional they are. And so I think it's a fair point to say that we can think about those outliers where if someone extraordinarily famous, if they went missing or someone close to them went missing. And so in my study, there were some news articles about a relative of Dwayne Wade's, the NBA player who went missing in Chicago, or who was the victim of a crime in Chicago. So we see that on a granular level. But when we look at the overall trends, those things tend to even out when we're talking about a big sample size. So then we can start to look at, okay, on average, or when we're not considering those types of extraordinary cases, what are the effects that we see? Because in general, as she just mentioned, the cases that have been exposed to national news coverage haven't been those types of extraordinary circumstances. They've been relatively ordinary white girls and white women.
Zach Summers is an attorney and criminologist. He's with the firm of Kirkland and Ellis in Chicago. Mr. Summers, thank you so much for your time and your work in this important area. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And Dr. Danielle Slakoff, she's an assistant professor of criminal justice at Sacramento State University, who studies white women missing syndrome. Dr. Slakoff, thank you as well. I really appreciate it, and look forward to staying in touch about your continuing work in this area.
Thank you so much for having me.
So that's it for us today. Tomorrow here on Midday, my guest will be John Davis. He's the host of Motor Week on PBS, and we'll talk about the latest automotive news and trends. I'll ask John when he thinks the chip shortage will end and where prices for used and new cars are headed. And with the ascendance of websites like Carvana, are brick-and-mortar car dealerships going the way of the Edsel? Plus, J. Wynn Russick will review Flyin' West. That's a new show at the Everyman Theater. So that's happening tomorrow here on Midday. Stay tuned now for Here and Now. That's on the way after the news. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks so much for being with us today and every day. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
You're listening to your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.